The wagon set forth the next day across the plateau to the rendezvous point, where they were joined by the wagons from Niederhochwald. Thierry von Hintervoltkopf commanded the three knights and Max's 15 armsmen. Eugen bore the Hochwald banner. Other wagons joined them along the way, one from an imperial holding by Stag's Leap, and another from the manor of St. Oswald's Chapel. The chapter provided two more armsmen, and Einhard the imperial knight brought his junker and five more armsmen. Thierry, seeing his small force thus augmented, grinned.
"'Sblood! I'd almost welcome a sally from Burg Falkenstein!'
From above the gorge, Dietrich heard that eerie whisper in which distant valleys speak, a patois formed from the wind through the naked branches and evergreen needles below, from the rushing brook cascading off the escarpment, from a choir of grasshoppers and other insects. The wagon track switchbacked down the face of the Katharinaberg. Inhospitable patches of gray stone and barren ground alternated with copses of desolate windshorn beeches. The road ahead wound only a few hundred feet below them, but across insuperably steep pitches, so that Dietrich sometimes spied the vanguard coming from the other direction. Footpaths ran off where wagons could not follow. He saw ancient stairs carved into the stone hillside, and wondered who had cut them. The bottom, when they reached it, was a wild ravine tangled with brush and toppled oaks, and flanked on both sides with great overhanging rocks and steep wooded precipices. A rushing torrent, fed by waterfalls plunging from the heights, crashed and hissed over rocks down its center, turning to mud what little track the wagons had. "There's Stag's Leap," said Gregor, pointing to an outcropping that jutted out over the gorge. "The story is that a hunter chased a stag through the woods near here, and the beast leapt from that crag over to the Breitnau side. You see how the valley pinches up here. Still, it was a wonderful leap, they say. The hunter was in such hot pursuit that he tried to follow, though with less happy results." Burg Falkenstein, high upon one of the precipices, held the gorge tight. Bartizans dotted the shield mower like warts on a toad, and were slit by cruciform balisteria to give openings for hidden archers. Sentries were silhouettes in the battlements' crenels, their gibes rendered indistinct by distance. The escort feigned indifference, but they hefted their shields a little higher and kept a tighter grip on their pennoned lances.
"Those dogs won't sally against knights," Thierry said after the troop had passed, with no more damage than the taunts. "Tough enough to take nuns or fat merchants, but they not stand fast in a real battle."
At the mouth of the gorge, the stream calmed from torrent to murmuring brook, and the narrow valley broadened into green meadows. On the heights above, a square tower commanded the view of the countryside.
"Falkenstein's watchtower," Max explained. "His burggraf here signals the castle when a party worth plundering passes by. Then Falkenstein sallies forth to block their advance, while the men in the watchtower come out to block the retreat."
In the broader, softer Kirchgartner Valley, the track from Falkenstein Gorge met the Freiburg High Road. The Hochwalders circled their wagons for the night and built a fire. Thierry told off men to stand watch.
"Safe enough to encamp here," Max told Dietrich. "If von Falkenstein sallies on this side, he must answer to the Graf of Urach, and that means Pforzheim and the whole Baden family."
"In olden times," Dietrich told Gregor as they ate their evening meal, "all caravans were like this. The merchants were armed with bows and swords and were sworn to each other by oaths."
"Were they?" asked Gregor. "Like an order of knights?"
"Very like. It was called a Hans, or in the French, a company, because they shared bread. The Schildrake carried the banner at the head of the band, as Eugen does, and the Hansgraf exercised authority over his brother merchants."
"Like Everard?"
"Doch. Save the caravans in those days were much larger and traveled from fair to fair."
"Those fairs must have been something to see. Sometimes I wish I lived in olden times. Were robber knights more common than now?"
"No, but there were Vikings from the north, Magyars from the east, and Saracens from their strongholds in the Alps."
"Saracens in the Alps?"
"A guard Frenet. They preyed upon merchants and pilgrims crossing between Italy and France."
"And now we must go to the Holy Land to fight them."
Thierry overheard and grunted without humor.
If the Sultan feels like attacking me, I know how to defend myself. But if he leaves me alone, I'll not bother him. Besides, if God is everywhere, why go to Jerusalem to find him?
Dietrich agreed. That's why we now elevate the host after the consecration, so folk will know that God is everywhere.
Of that I would not know, Thierry continued. But if Jerusalem was so holy, why did so many return grown wicked?
He tossed his head toward the mouth of the gorge.
You've heard the story about him?
Dietrich nodded. The devil freed his ancestor from the Saracens at the price of his soul.
Thierry wiped the juices from his plate with a crust of bread.
There's more to the tale.
He put the plate aside, and his junker took it for cleaning. The others at the fire clamored for the tale, so the knight wiped hands on knees, looked around the circling faces, and told them.
The first Falkenstein was Ernst von Schwaben, a goodly knight endowed with all manly virtues, save that heaven had denied him a son to carry his name to posterity. He took to cursing heaven over it, which sorely afflicted his pious wife. A voice in his dreams told him that to make peace with heaven, he must make pilgrimage to the Holy Land. The proud Graf was horrified at this terrible penance, but at last he smothered his own desires and departed with Barbarossa on the second great kingly pilgrimage.
Before setting forth, he broke his wedding ring, and keeping half, told his wife that if he had not returned in 7 years, she should consider their ties no longer binding.
Now, the German army came to grief, and Redbeard drowned, but Ernst pressed on to the Holy Land, where his sword became renowned among the infidels. In one battle he was captured by the Sultan. With each new moon his captor offered him release, if only he would embrace the religion of Muhammad. Naturally, he refused. So passed the years, until one day the Sultan, impressed with his chivalry and fortitude, released him. He wandered through the desert always toward the setting sun until one night, as he slept, the devil came to him.
Ha! Said Gregor in the firelight. I knew the fiend was in it somewhere.
The serfs who had driven the estate wagons crossed themselves at the dreadful name.
The wicked one reminded him that the 7th year would expire on the morrow and his wife would wed his cousin. But he promised to bring him home before the morning, and that he would not lose his soul, provided he slept throughout the journey. So it was that he made his wicked compact. The evil one changed himself into a lion, which, when the knight mounted, flew off high over land and sea. Terrified, he closed his eyes and slept, until a falcon's screech roused him. He looked down, horrified, where far below stood his castle. A marriage procession was entering. With a wild roar, the evil spirit dashed him down and fled. During the banquet, the Grafin Ida noticed this stranger, who never turned his sorrowful eyes from her face. When he had emptied his goblet, he handed it to a servant to present to his mistress. When she glanced inside the cup, she saw half of a ring.
Everyone gusted a satisfied sigh. Thierry continued.
Thrusting her hand into her bosom, she pulled forth the other half of the ring and threw it joyfully into the goblet. Thus were the two halves united, and the wife enfolded in her husband's arms. A year later she bore him a child. And that is why the family puts a falcon on their arms.
Everard said, One almost understands how a man might strike such a bargain. Always the evil one holds out a lesser good, said Dietrich, hoping to turn our hearts from the greater. But a man cannot lose his soul by a trick.
Besides, said Thierry, looking with satisfaction over his audience, Ernst could have been a saint, and Philip would still be a robber.
That was a romantic age, Gregor suggested. Those tales I used to hear of Redbeard and that English king Lionheart, said Dietrich. They knew how to name their kings back then, and good King Louis, and the noble Saracen, who was friend and foe to the Lionheart. What was his name?
Saladin.
Most chivalrous knight, Thierry commented, for all that he was an infidel.
And where are they now? Said Dietrich. Only names and songs.
Thierry drank from his goblet and handed it to his Junker to fill again.
A song is enough,